Welcome to the Wine Scholar Guild podcast. I'm Valerie Caruso, a French wine scholar and a podcast host, and I'm filling in today for Lisa Airy to talk with Decanter's Andrew Jefford about the Languedoc Roussillon. Andrew is also a webinar presenter and immersion trip leader, and therefore this episode is a little primer for an upcoming trip to the region. Welcome, Andrew.
Good to be with you, Valerie.
Oh, this is a treat. I will tell you, it's a treat. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Languedoc is one of my favorite places. So for those of us who've never been to Languedoc Roussillon, how would you describe that?
Okay, well, there's various different ways in which you can describe Languedoc Roussillon. Let's start with the kind of statistical stuff. It's France's biggest wine region. There's around 230,000 hectares of vines in the four départements of the Aude, of Gard, of Hérault, and of Pennées Oriental. Really, it's, if you want to imagine it on the map, it's everything along the south between the Rhone Delta and the Spanish border. Culturally, it's two different regions, really. Languedoc is French. It's been populous but relatively poor for a long time, often Protestant in religion, whereas Roussillon is French Catalonia. Indeed, it was part of Spanish Aragon until 1659. It only became French at that point in 1659. Viticulturally, it's two regions as well, but two different sorts of region. Really, the most sensible way to look at that is to think about the plain down by the coast, the low-lying land. That's really where all the IGP, the Vin de Pays wines, as we used to call them, and the Vin de France comes from, most of the volume. And then you have the other region, which is up in the hills. That's where all the Appellation Contrôlée wine is, all the quality wine. And out of that 230,000 hectares, the Appellation stuff is about 89,000 hectares, so well under half. And then, since we're talking to people and they're listening, as it were, a little bit on the radio, let's just describe it scenically. Scenically, it's very different from Provence. Provence, really, the mountains and the hills come tumbling right down to the sea and they fall into the sea. Over in the Languedoc, as I mentioned just now, you have a plain, so you have a long, sandy coast. All the way along the southern coast until you get to Roussillon itself, which is rather rocky. You have lagoons, you have agricultural flatlands. And then once you head inland, then you begin to see the hills. The hills and the land around the hills are often covered in the wild scrub that people are familiar with when they think about Languedoc, the garrigue. The term garrigue, by the way, tells you that it's limestone soils. Some of you may also know the term maquis. But maquis generally means acid soils, so garrigue for the limestone soils. And then you get all of that up until the evergreen plants and trees give way to the deciduous trees, especially chestnuts. And by then you're onto the lower Severn Mountains. So it's that land between the sea and the mountains.
So it is diverse, depending on how far inland you go. So with respect to the terroirs of the region, are there any that you would consider to be extraordinary? And if so, why would that be?
Okay, well, I have to preface what I'm about to say by saying that, you know, it's early stages. We're still learning. Every year we discover new things about the Languedoc. It's a region in constant evolution. But the bits I guess I'd pick out traveling east to west, so traveling from the Rhone end, first of all. Pic Saint-Loup, that's my local appellation now. It's won its appellation this year and not before time. It's quite cool, quite inflected, quite fresh, quite pure, very good Syrah country. Then the next one I'd particularly point out is Terrasse du Larzac. That's a little further west. Wonderful, well-drained, stony benchlands, I guess you'd call them, as well as some fantastic high white wine country and some rocky, schisty zones as well. It's actually very diverse, Terrasse du Larzac, but there have been some great wines out of there. Saint-Chinian is another top zone that has two different sectors. One is a limestone sector, one is a schist sector, but you can get some terrific quality from that. Quite voluptuous, rich wines. Fougères, not far from Saint-Chinian, really next door to the schist sector of Saint-Chinian. Very good stuff around there too. There's some good parcels around Pézenas, the old town of Pézenas. I've mentioned Picpoul de Pinay. That's those white wines that grow right down by the seaside, down near the coastal lagoons. That's the great oyster wine of the Languedoc. further over. Now we're right over in the west. La Clap can be very, very interesting. That was a former limestone island in Roman times. It's now attached to the mainland. It became attached to the mainland, I think, in the 11th or 12th century. But it's a limestone upland and very good white wines there, as well as some outstanding Syrah in a riper style. And then the final potentially fine zone I draw everybody's attention to is in Roussillon. It's the Agly Valley, A-G-L-Y. That's the land up and down the valley around the village of Mouri. And for me, when you're looking for sort of power and excitement and depth and density, that's probably just about the ultimate. In Languedoc-Roussillon terms, it's really well up with Priorat and the Douro in terms of that particular super turbocharged style, but fantastic wines as well.
So you pretty much just answered my next question about the world-class wines. And would you say a lot of these can be accessed at ordinary prices?
In part. I wouldn't agree with that 100%. The thing is that there aren't many star wines yet. So very often the very best wines in a particular zone are quite expensive. They're not necessarily super cheap. I mean, over here in France, they're often 20, 25 euros plus. And that means they'll be kind of $30 plus in US terms. There is great value to be found, certainly, but it really requires importers to do a lot of hard work searching it out amongst the vastness of the offer. That's the thing with Languedoc at the moment. There's just so much on offer. So many producers struggling to get their message across, find their market, that it can be a little bit chaotic. And you need a good intermediary, I think, to help you find absolutely the best value. But absolutely, there's great value there to be found, that's for sure.
Would you say then that the wines of Languedoc can compete with those premium priced Bordeaux and Burgundy, since we are kind of going up the price scale? And a lot of those that are out of reach for many of us, those higher priced Burgundies that we were thinking of. And so these are probably the ones you would recommend, the ones around Mauri, for example.
Yes, in that particular zone, the Agly Valley, Massamiel, for example, is a name to look out for, a wonderful historic estate, traditionally producing fortified wines, but now actually producing a sensational range of table wines. I mean, I mentioned Terrasse du Larzac a bit earlier. I dare say some of those listening will know Mas Julien. It's been one of the leading Languedoc domains for many, many years now, and it's outstanding in quality. A rather newer domain in the same zone is La Peira. To give it its full name, it's La Peira en la Damaisella. A different style to Mas Julien. Mas Julien, I would say, is a kind of indigenous Languedoc style. La Peira is a slightly more flamboyant style, but absolutely sensational quality. What else? Around Pézenas, there's Prieuré de Saint-Jean-de-Bibion. That's another really leading domain for two or three decades now, a long, long time, although it's been through several different ownerships. La Clap, you've got Château d'Ambès. That's run by a former régisseur of Château Lafite. So everything done with great attention to detail and great finesse there. And probably, really, I also ought to mention somewhere like Domaine d'Ossière in Corbière. That is the Château Lafite property in the Languedoc.
Okay.
I went over and tasted there a couple of years ago, and I was very impressed by what I tasted. You don't often see the wines for sale around here, but I think internationally they're quite well distributed. And of course, we shouldn't mention Domaine d'Ossière without also mentioning Baronnac, which is up in the Limoux zone. They produce both white and red there, and that's the Languedoc domain of the other branch of the Rothschild family, the Mouton branch. So that's just a few names of people who are really struggling to try and achieve something ambitious down here in Languedoc and Roussillon.
And you've mentioned a couple areas that they consider kind of sort of a Grand Cru, which leads to the next question about trying to identify their terroirs with the Cru nomenclature. The recognition seems to be declared and rescinded at will based on changing criteria. For example, Saint-Chinian du Roquebrun Cru lost its status because the production is small. Yet the Cave du Roquebrun crafts award-winning wines regardless. So what does the Cru status mean in Languedoc? And then how reliable is it going to be in the future as an indicator of quality terroir?
Okay, well, for me, really, the whole Cru thing is a bit premature. If I was going to come up with a Cru system for the Languedoc, I'd start work on it in about 2050. I'll be long dead by then, of course, and I'd finish it about 2100. I just think that you only realize these kind of things over a, 100-year period. And remember, that just means 100 harvests. You only get one harvest a year. You only get one go a year at all of this. And the really serious effort with Languedoc wine didn't really resume after phylloxera until the 1980s. So I would think if you add 100 years to 1980, that'll take you to 2080. You know, we will know roughly where the great zones are by then. But to start saying that this particular bit of Minervois or this particular bit of Corbière is better than all the other bits, I just think it's a little bit premature.
Okay.
I just think, you know, they've wanted to do it because it's a way of drawing attention to their zones and to their regions, and I understand that, fair enough. But I would just encourage people to make their own minds up. And in the end, it's always economics that decides these things. The great wines will be those that are most expensive and can best sustain an expensive price over a period of 20 or 30 years. And we just don't know too much about that yet. We just have to wait and see.
Right. And so I'm going to skip ahead a couple questions here because you did mention it's, you know, we need to probably slow down and not try to stuff everything into a cru region. But there are some sites and these wines are going to be producer dependent or perhaps grower dependent. So these top sites that haven't been completely discovered or recognized, how would you go about identifying these top wines or these jewels for these different regions then if we can't depend on a cru nomenclature?
In a way, my advice is a happy advice, which is try as much as you can.
I like that.
Just keep trying different things, keep looking, keep having a look at this, having a look at that, go to tastings, follow them up as best you can. And also, it's a good idea if you read about a particularly ambitious producer, it's always worth trying their wine. Because I would say to you, Valerie, that if you want to make great wine in the Languedoc, you need to be a bit crazy. you really need to push the envelope, as the cliche goes, because yields are naturally very, very low here anyway. I mean, you can make a great Bordeaux second growth claret at 40 hectolitres a hectare, no problem. But almost any serious quality wine in Languedoc cannot be yielding anything over 30 hectolitres a hectare, and often it'll be half of that. So a little bit of producer ambition, somebody who's really trying to make a name for themselves, is often a good thing. That said, if you see a cuvée that's obviously been lavishly oaked, I would probably steer clear of that because, in my opinion, very often new oak barrels are a weapon of mass destruction down here in Languedoc. They're not a good idea. It doesn't go very well with the wines. So I would look for the most ambitious wines you can, but steer clear of any obviously oaked cuvée, and then just keep trying. You know, we're all involved in the research process about discovering where the great wines will be in the future. We need consumers to keep trying. We need them to rebuy the wines they really like, the great value that they find. And that's how, in the end, we'll discover the great crus and zones and individual sites, as I say, by 2050 onwards.
Okay, then, shifting gears to winemaking and grapes, as you mentioned, a lot of people may not realize that Carignan formed an historic background for the Languedoc red blend. And I think there's a history of carbonic use of that grape as well. Do you see a future for that grape in this crazy winemaking trend?
Yeah. Well, I do see a future for Carignan, though I wouldn't suggest it's going to be the star variety of Languedoc. Let me just describe a bit more what I mean.
Okay.
Carignan can be great, not all the time, not easily. It can be great when it's old vine material in a great site. Normally, it's a high yielding grape variety, and it's also rather acidic. Personally, I don't much like high acid reds unless they're matched with structured tannins and plenty of depth and wealth of flavor. And if with a high yielding young Carignan, you really struggle to get much tannin and structure in there. It just wants to yield a bit too generously. Now, I'm not telling you anything unusual or new. Everybody acclaims the 100-year-old Carignan down here. But nobody ever then goes on to explain exactly what they're going to do when their 100-year-old Carignan eventually dies. Mm-hmm. Are they going to plant it again and wait another 100 years? I don't think so. 100 years is a long time to wait for quality to come on stream. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be a widespread, easy choice in the future for Languedoc once people get around to replanting. However, I accept, as in regions like Priorat in Spain or Sardinia in Italy, it can be really, really good. And of course, given global warming, I wouldn't give up on it. It is a variety well suited to hot conditions, not just warm conditions, but hot conditions. And I guess Languedoc may well be as warm as Sardinia or Priorat in about 30 years. That emphasis on heat really means that it's best in the western Languedoc rather than in the east. The west tends to be warmer than the east. Corbière is a very good Carignan zone, for example. And just before we finally leave it, I'd also say it can work well in blends, particularly when the Syrah perhaps has got very ripe and needs a little bit of de-sweetening. Carignan is quite good for de-sweetening excessively ripe Syrah.
Okay. And Grenache seems to be a big player as well as the Syrah and the Mourvèd. How does this blend? I see a lot of people say SGM, and I've always said GSM yep. when referring to the Rhone. So how are we talking differences here with respect to that blend?
Yeah, well, you know, Mourvèd is the latest ripening of all of those. So if you're really up in the hills and it's cool, you're not going to get your Mourvèd ripe. So it'll tend to be Syrah and Grenache. But when you get right down onto the coast, then Mourvèd plays more of a part because it has the warmth it needs. In terms of sort of sensorial profile, well, what would I say? I guess I'd say for Languedoc, the wines are often a little bit less perfumed or perfumed differently anyway. Not so much fruit perfume, perhaps, as the Rhone, more of the typical dry herbal perfumes. They're a little less fleshy, a little drier in the finish, a little stonier perhaps. Yep, certainly those herbal characters. And then they can be a little bit more austere and often with a, you know, a little bitter touch in the finish, which kind of almost adds to the herbal character to it. So that would be the kind of things I would say for a sensorial profile. They're not necessarily as fleshy and perfumed, as perfumed with fruit as the Rhone, but they tend to have more of this kind of secondary, refined, quasi-austere character to them.
I think that's a really good summary for listeners to take into account when you're looking for these wines on the shelf as well, as far as how would you compare the two before you put one into your cart. As far as the international varieties go in the Languedoc, and especially at the upper tier, who is doing the best with these, such as the Merlot or Cabernet or any of those kind of grapes?
Yeah, okay, well, Merlot. There's a guy called Alain Chabanon, Chabanon. He's somebody who understands Merlot very well. He's made some fantastic Merlots down the years. Cabernet, well, of course, Master Dumas Gassac, Grange des Pères, most of us know those names, and they do very good things with Cabernet, albeit in a very different style. Master Dumas is a much fresher, lighter, smaller scale style, partly because it's not just Cabernet, it's also a big suite of about 20 other varieties, which are all picked at the same time. So some of them will be picked a little bit early and some will be picked late. And anyway, all of that gives a kind of freshness and a petiteness almost to Master Dumas. Grange des Pères is a much richer wine. But if we're talking about Cabernet, look out for a wine, a producer called Grange de Quatre Sous. Grange de Quatre Sous. It's in the Saint-Chinian zone, but obviously the wine made with international varieties will be an IGP wine. Anyway, Kermit Lynch imports that wine. Okay. There's one particular cuvée called Le Moulin, L-O and then M-O-L-I-N. That could be a really exciting effort with Cabernet. It's Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc. And what else? Well, we've got Chardonnay and Pinot, of course. And they're a terrific success in Limoux, way, way over in the upper Oude Valley in the far west. Yeah, those are some of the international varieties, and those are the kind of places they can do well. But I would say I always sort of resist too much separation between the international varieties and what are called the indigenous varieties, because the truth is that Syrah and Mourvèd are not indigenous to Languedoc.
Right.
Grenache a little bit more so, but you know they're also international varieties in a way. And the other thing is that when you find a great site, actually, the varieties don't matter too much. You just want the varieties that best express that site. It doesn't matter too much what they are. Of course, you know, if it's the approved varieties, it fetches up as Appellation wine, and if they're not, it fetches up as IGP. You know, puts the dichotomy I think, over prominently into our minds. I rather regret that. But anyway, that's the way it is. So that's the way it is.
And you mentioned Limoux earlier, which brings me to one of my last questions here, because Languedoc does make some great white and sparkling wine. So are there other cool terroirs and or grapes that might show a little bit more potential? And are there standout producers in the white arena as well?
Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, I mentioned Limoux, that's for sure. That's certainly a cool terroir. Well known, of course, for its Chardonnay as a still wine, and then for its sparkling wines as well. But actually, there's not just Chardonnay there as well. There's also other varieties like, local variety, the Muzac, and then there's Chenin Blanc there as well. So well worth looking out for if you like those fresh whites and as well as sparkling. Another, actually, there's a particular subzone of the Terrasse du Larzac appellation called Pas de l'Escalette. It's a little tiny zone, really halfway up into the Cévennes. You go past it as you go up the A75 motorway. And that's very, very cool. Terrific white wines from there. And then in general, I'd say that, you know, Pic Saint-Loup is a relatively cool part of the Languedoc as well. Quite high rainfall, much lower temperatures than some of the other zones. So that's also worth looking out for. Not so much for whites, because actually the appellation isn't available for whites at the moment. There are some good whites there, but they're all IGP. But also for the kind of fresher style of red, the Syrah is terrific in Pic Saint-Loup. But I would also say to you that don't assume that you have to have a cool zone to make great whites in the Languedoc. There are also great whites from the warmer zones as well, providing you're using well-adapted varieties like Grenache Blanc and Grenache Gris, for example. And of course, the zone I'd particularly like to draw your attention to there is one called Collioure, that's in Roussillon. It's available for both red and white, but the whites there can be absolutely terrific based on those Grenaches. And really, for me, that's one of the best white wine zones in Languedoc, Roussillon in general. And then, you know, also don't forget Picboule de Pinay. They're not hugely complex wines, but you know, good wine doesn't have to be complex. It can just be absolutely perfect for what it is. Picboule de Pinay is like a kind of the Muscadet of the South with a bit of extra lemony flesh, and with seafood, with oysters, with fish dishes. It can be absolutely fantastic. So that's a terrific one to look out for as well. Picboule is the variety itself. And they've been very clever in that appellation. They've sort of excluded anybody else in any other appellation from using Picboule. And they're even trying to squeeze it out of the local IGP rules as well, so that if you want Picboule, you have to go to Picboule de Pinay.
Yeah.
Clever on their part.
Well, I'm smiling here, and I'm smiling and nodding like the listeners can see this, because it just makes me want to go there because you describe it so beautifully. So we do have a tour coming up. Could you maybe talk a little bit about the tour and what we have to look forward to and where we can find out more information about it?
Yeah, well, you can find out more information, obviously, via, you know, the Wine Scholar Guild website and the Wine Scholar Guild mailings. I know some of the places have been taken, but I don't think all of them yet. So there are still places available. And as to what we're doing in the tour, well, we haven't yet tied up every single appointment and visit. But what we'll certainly be doing is traveling from one end to the other. And it's big, the Languedoc. It takes you at least 4 hours to get from one end to the other. There is an awful lot to discover. Anybody who's listening who's been on the Languedoc tour before, we will be doing it slightly differently this time, because I think that's more fun to ring the changes. And I don't yet know where we'll begin and where we'll end, but we will guarantee to go from A to B to C and all the way through to Z. So you'll have a great introduction to Languedoc in that trip. And I'm personally super looking forward to it, because I love this region a lot. It's a wonderful time of year to be there. We'll be there in the early autumn. My favorite times of year here are you know, late spring and early autumn, because the big heat has finished and you've still got all the light and it all looks gorgeous. Very, very picturesque vineyards very often. So I'm sure we're set up to have a really wonderful trip.
Well, it sounds wonderful. And you're going to be guided by a local, Andrew, because you live in Montpellier. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yep. I can jump on my bike. I'm not going to do it because it's dark as I speak to you, but I can jump on my bike and ride up to Pic Saint-Loup in about half an hour.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for talking about the trip with me today. I'm sure listeners are going to enjoy your descriptions of the region and the wines. Thank you so much, Andrew.
My pleasure, Valerie.